everybody. This is Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here in Valparaiso, Indiana, and we service clients all over the nation. We also am host of Money Matters with Greg, and that's what we're doing today. We're doing our part two with Lauren Brandrup, from Director of Group Benefits Retirement Plan Consultant with Next Level Planning and Wealth Management out of Brookfield, Wisconsin. We did part one before. I hope you're able to check that out on the podcast, which is Money Matters with Greg. You find it on Spotify and iTunes, and you can also find it on our YouTube channel, Farrell Wealth. If you just search Farrell Wealth under YouTube, you'll find us in the videos that we have there. And the first part, we started with what is a fiduciary, how do fiduciaries work, what are the responsibilities, and now we really wanted to get into some plan governance and what matters to a 401k plan for plan sponsors and plan governance. Talk about documents, disclosures, understanding some sort of support from financial. Maybe we can get into some service providers and maybe even some benchmarking. We'll see. We're going to try to keep it to about 15 minutes or so. And if we run long, then we'll do just another part. We'll just make gives us a good excuse to do this again. So with that, I want to welcome Lauren Brandrup from Director of Group Benefits, a retirement plan consultant with Next Level Planning. Lauren, how are you?
Doing good. Thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it. I've had a lot of fun last week.
Yeah, you did a great job, and we're excited to be able to have you. It's great having somebody on that really, you know, like we do, you know, it's just nice to be able to talk and kind of geek out with someone that actually knows what they're talking about in regards to retirement plans. That's why I just really enjoyed being able to kind of go back and forth and helping out some of the plan sponsors out there that, you know, I mean, this is confusing. There's a lot of stuff out there, and it's just a lot of information. So, thanks for being on again. Just want to kind of dive in here. Plan governance. When you start talking about plan governance to your plan sponsors, you know, where do you even go with documentation and disclosures and some of that due diligence? What are your sort of your talking points?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, to your point, this stuff is confusing. It is difficult. You know, most business owners are focused on the keeping their employees paid, lights on, and keeping operations going. And but unfortunately, these things are very important. And when I'm talking with current clients or potential prospective clients that are looking at our services, you know, one of the top line areas that I really like to talk about is what are your processes for documentation, for disclosures, for making sure that you understand the services that are provided to you by the different service providers you have. So typically I kind of try and start off with a due diligence kind of checklist or checkup of where you're at. There's some great resources that are available. I think we provided those last time from the Department of Labor. They are a little bit more meaty, if you will, meaning they may not all apply to your particular plan depending upon how it's set up. But there's also some other checklists that we have that are great pieces from some different fund wholesaler companies that we utilize. Certainly, you know, we don't recommend them in any specific instance, but they have some very good pieces that are very educational. I think it's very important, ultimately, for any plan sponsor to make sure that they are demonstrating prudency, as we talked about last time, and a duty of care for, essentially how they're operating their plan in the best interest of plan participants and their beneficiaries. I think the checklist is a great way to start off and say, okay, what do I have on file? Because there are some documents that you are required to have readily available or now in a digital format that are essentially similar to their original format. Some of those being like the adoption agreement, your IRS determination letter, having a recent copy of your summary plan description, having copies of any loan certificates that have been issued, loans to participants, your fidelity bond, having a copy of that. It's important to have these in a file because heaven forbid you ever receive that letter or that phone call from the Department of Labor, you have 10 days to respond. And it's not a fun process. I personally have not gone through that process, but I've worked with a lot of advisors that you can get through it very easily as long as you have good processes. So really making sure you have those documents in place, and then really making sure you keep good documentation and rationale of any decisions you make in regards to the plan, whether it's changing a service provider or changing investments inside the plan. So,
perfect. Thanks for the explanation, Lauren. I really appreciate it. And then talking about here, you mentioned something here in the due diligence file and the documentation, and you know, really having a vault. Even there's a I know a lot of virtual vaults are a great place for DOL, you know, agents or all to some departments of the DOL on an audit. You know, they can literally go into a vault. You can give them access to a vault. And that's a great place to be able to have a digital format rather than paper copy in regards to the company. But you mentioned something as far as the Fidelity bond. You know, go ahead and just talk to us about what is a Fidelity bond and why is it required?
Yeah, you know, a Fidelity bond oftentimes I find is one of those easy red flags that are thrown up on a year-end Form 5500. You know, one of the questions that the box is checked is your Fidelity bond sufficient to the requirement? So under Section 412 of ERISA, they require a Fidelity bond in place for any kind of retirement plan that is covered under ERISA. So any kind of 401k plan, defined benefit plan, it's important to have because what it does is it insures the plan against losses due to fraud or dishonesty. So it's not necessarily covering the named fiduciaries from their liability. Rather, it's covering the actual plan assets from any potential larceny, theft, embezzlement, forgery or misappropriation in how the assets are run in the plan. I mean, there's been some pretty high level cases here the last couple of years, one being with a third party administrator that was more or less embezzling funds out of a retirement plan that they were working on. So it's important to have this in place because essentially the Department of Labor requires that you insure your plan for at least 10% of plan assets. You typically, you know, for if you're just starting a 401k or you have an existing 401k, that Fidelity bond is typically no less than $1,000 up to a maximum of $500,000. If you offer employer securities inside your plan, that can go up to a maximum of $1 million. The one benefit of a Fidelity bond though is you can actually pay that cost out of plan assets. You also have the ability to, you know, pay for that outside of that. Typically, a Fidelity bond is very easily attainable. It can be done through your current business insurance or property and casualty provider. Typically, I find that most employers will have some level of like an auto increase in their coverage amount built in to the Fidelity bond, usually for a 3 to 5 year period of time. That way, you don't have to worry about your plan assets growing and your Fidelity bond maybe being insufficient, which again is an automatic red flag on your 5500. Now, one question I get regularly is, well, what about fiduciary liability insurance? If the Fidelity bond is for the plan, what about me as the plan sponsor? And that's a great question. There is specific Fidelity liability or fiduciary liability insurance available for plan sponsors and named fiduciaries to go and obtain, to cover them. However, you cannot pay for that insurance out of plan assets. That has to be paid out of the company cost. Essentially, that insures the named fiduciary against losses that are caused by breaches, such as improper advice or counsel, imprudent investment of assets or lack of investment diversity, failure to administer the plan according to the plan documents, which can be very easy, depending upon, you know, what your definition of compensation and your plan document might be. Additionally, it also helps insure against errors or omissions in the plan administration and can cover penalties and fees levied by the Department of Labor or IRS under a voluntary settlement program. So it's something that is out there. It's not talked about as regularly as I think it should be, but it's important, especially if you're operating a larger plan that maybe has some, you know, high complexities to it. Maybe you have different business units, different types of salaried versus hourly employees. So it's definitely something worth looking at to see if that cost is worth insuring the people who are ultimately liable for the functions and operations of the plan.
Perfect. The one of the things that we ran into was, you know, years ago, that Fidelity bond had to be re-upped every single year. And with, you know, increases in assets and the market returns, you know, people sort of lost the fact that, you know, if they had a $2 million plan, they only needed $200,000 of coverage of that 10%. You know, it would grow to $2.5 million, and they needed more insurance. And it's so cheap. You know, it's not that expensive. You just got to get it done. You know, any business owner doesn't want to have that risk, but it was a pain, you know, it is to be able to make sure, and having now this 3 to 5 year, you know, sort of extension is great, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely correct that it is really cheap to get a Fidelity bond. I mean, you can cover, you know, a $3 million plan for probably a few hundred dollars a year. It's just really just a kind of a rider, a contract rider. It is in place. They do ask some specific questions about the plan, who are the named fiduciaries. I've gone through this process before. It's not something that I regularly get involved with. With our clients, but I do, it's a question that I do like to ask because it's one of those things that, you know, can cause a red flag. And the last thing you want to do is draw attention to your plan in an improper manner. It really is cheap. It's best practice. You're required to have it by law. And ultimately it's something that's easy to put in place going forward and have kind of that auto escalate feature to cover the plan as the plan grows. Because as we know, you have a really good year in the market. And if you're growing as a organization very rapidly, suddenly your plan can jump from $1 million to $3 million. And next thing you know, you're underinsured for covering any kind of losses on your plan.
And just as a reminder, you know, going to your property casualty person or group, and just making sure, I mean, they're not going to get rich on your premium for a Fidelity bond for a 401k. It's really cheap. But also the thing we found is making sure that the TPA knows that you're on an auto escalating, you know, policy, and making sure that that gets updated every single year on your Form 5500. So, you know, it's a 3 or 5 year sort of deal, whatever you decide to do. And making sure that that's mentioned. That's the other thing. Like, you know, we've just seen it. I don't know if you've seen that at all, Lauren, out there with, you know, just making sure the TPA knows about it.
Yeah, you know, and I've seen that. I think, you know, whether you're, and this is kind of maybe a little bit different of a talking line here, but whether your plan is what's considered bundled and you have your plan record keeper that's handling the actual administration of the plan, you know, handling, helping out with loans, hardship requests, doing distributions or withdrawals, helping prepare the Form 5500, or whether you like want to work with somebody local, a lot of our business is working with a third party administrator. We work with multiple third party administrators, you know, across the area, up here in the Wisconsin area. And, you know, at the end of the day, each one of them kind of has their own processes. So I find a lot of times when I'm going and looking at doing my annual plan reviews, or in some cases quarterly reviews with clients, I'll go back to the third party administrator, ask them some basic questions on the plan as far as plan testing. So I can see, you know, hey, are there some errors or issues here that maybe need to be addressed in our review? And part of that process is asking the TPA, where's the Fidelity bond currently at? Was it sufficient to cover that? Is there a auto increase feature available? It's just really to asking those questions and being a you know, that quarterback that I talked about last time for your clients. Because at the end of the day, you know, my job is to try and help our clients and plan sponsors do what they need to do, which is run their business and keep people employed, grow, and also offer good sustainable benefits while being compliant. My role, I really look at it as kind of, again, you know, an all-encompassing, you know, helper, if you will, and an extension of really their HR department by trying to help and talk about all of these different topics, because unfortunately, they're not always talked about. Third party administrators are great to work with. They're local. A lot of times I find that they're quick to respond. The problem is, though, they have a lot of volume on their hands. And, you know, as a plan consultant and an advisor to retirement plans, it's very important to ask these questions that sometimes are often forgotten.
Excellent stuff. Thanks so much. Lauren Brandrup here on Money Matters with Greg. The show's Money Matters with Greg. And we talk here on a number of different things. Today, we are geeking out in regards to retirement plan and retirement plan consulting, which a number of really good advisors out there do. And this is one of them. And Lauren Brandrup, he's Director of Group Benefits, Retirement Plan Consultant with Next Level Planning and Wealth Management in Brookfield, Wisconsin. By the way, you can find him on LinkedIn. That's where he basically contacts a lot of people throughout LinkedIn. And obviously, website is nlpwm.com. So just given the information on Lauren there, and then we're going to talk here in a second about annual disclosures. And I just want to go through, you know, just look, one of the biggest things we see in plan sponsors, and I'm sure you see it as well, is like, you know, is business owners, plan sponsors, you know, trustees asking, look, what do I have to get out there? What are the typical documents that I'm required to send to plan participants? Why are these important? You know, who provides them? Who does it? Who sends it out? Do I send it out? I'll send it out. If you tell me, it's kind of like, just tell me the rules and I'll do it. And most plan sponsors just want to know what's due. Does the TPA send out? Does a custodian send out? So can you go over some of the fee disclosure, auto enrollment, safe harbor notice, all these different things that might be necessary to be sent out? And just sort of like some of the rules in regards to some of these disclosures that are necessary and required to get to participants.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. And it's a very timely question, because as we're heading here, it's hard to believe we're almost into August, you know, heading into later into the third quarter. You're getting right around that time where most plans have a year end of 12/31, and it's annual disclosure time. And annual disclosures are very important. There's been some, you know, updates recently. I'm not going to get, maybe that's a whole different topic and segment, but the Department of Labor has provided some additional guidance recently to electronic disclosures, which has been helpful, because previously, you know, we were running under early 2000 law with how electronic disclosures could be provided, which kind of, you know, goes back to the early days of the internet, really, before any of this that we're doing right now. But these are very important. It's very important to notify participants, depending upon how your plan is set up, of their rights that are afforded to them under the plan. So a couple of common disclosures that, you know, were back in, I think it was 2012, enacted from the Department of Labor and under ERISA to provide more transparency in retirement plans, was a participant fee disclosure called the 404A5. And then additionally, there is a fee disclosure for the plan level for the plan sponsor called a 408B2. The 404A5 typically will list all the investments covered under the plan, their historical return, typically over a 1, 3, 5, 10-year period of time, in regards to their benchmark. And then it also provides the expenses of you know, the plan essentially and the investments on the 404A5. One issue I find often is that these disclosures, while they're great and they help lead to more transparency, there's not really a specific organization to how they're delivered to people. Some record keepers provide them and send them out. Some provide them through a participant's online portal. Some put that onus back on the plan. It's really important when looking at your annual disclosure package that needs to be provided to your participants is understanding, again, as I've said a few times, who are my service providers and what do they do? If you are in a bundled arrangement where your record keeper is also handling the plan administration, there's probably a very good chance that they are handling a lot of these disclosures, whether it's mail or whether it's, you know, posting them on a portal. It's important to understand the differences. Now, if you're unbundled, we talked a little bit about third-party administrators, that in some cases, some of those disclosures would actually come from the third-party administrator. Some third-party administrators, if they're acting like last time we talked about, that 316, they're assigned fiduciary to provide the documents and plan administration, they will provide those for you. I do have some TPAs we work with that under arrangements, they will help provide a couple of disclosures. The other fee disclosure that's important is the 408B2. That's the plan sponsor level disclosure that a record keeper is required by law to provide to you. That's typically supposed to be provided at least annually. I find often that that is updated on a monthly basis. The participant fee disclosure is also required to be provided to participants at least every 12 months. So that's just really one of the basics. You know, the rest of it is dependent upon how your plan is set up. Now, for example, if your plan is set up as an auto enrollment arrangement and you have elected a qualified default investment alternative, or as we call it, a QDIA, very regularly, those are a target date fund that was expanded under the Pension Protection Act of 2006. 2008. The notice with that is important to be provided to participants prior to them being auto-enrolled in the plan. They're supposed to get at least 30 days notice before they are auto-enrolled to let them know that if you don't take action, you will be enrolled at this percentage and into this particular fund. By enrolling somebody in a target date fund or a QDIA, it provides a safe harbor to plan sponsors because these are participant-directed plans. Additionally, at year end, if you have people that have been default enrolled into, you know, a QDIA, they're required to get a similar notice, letting them know that they can opt to move their funds out of that particular investment. Additionally, on top of that, if your plan is what's considered a safe harbor plan, which will help you get around some different plan testing arrangements, where maybe your higher compensated people are capped at a certain amount, a safe harbor arrangement typically has a much more rapid vesting schedule for employer monies that are deposited. There's many different arrangements. That's probably a whole nother segment in its own, but that's important too. You're required to provide that notice typically 30 to 90 days prior to the plan year end. That notice, if you're in an unbundled arrangement with a TPA, is provided by the TPA. Typically, that's not something they're going to send out. I find regularly that they send that to a plan sponsor, and then the sponsor is responsible for sending it out. And again, another reminder is you have to send these disclosures to all eligible plan participants. Even people who have opted out, they are still required to get these disclosures on an annual basis, including their anybody that has money left in the plan as a terminated employee or a beneficiary. So it's important to know these different documents. And outside of that, you have some other documents that'll come up. Your summary plan description that is supposed to be provided 90 days prior to be covered under, within 90 days of being covered underneath the plan or upon demand. That's one thing that plan sponsors really need to know, or even administrators that maybe aren't in a fiduciary role and are just kind of supporting the plan, like from an HR standpoint. They are required, if somebody provides written request for a summary plan description, they are required under law to provide that within 30 days. There are some hefty civil and monetary penalties for not adhering to that. You know, if you have some kind of edit in your plan, so, you know, the CARES Act, there's some different optional provisions that have come about. If you decide to elect to adopt those, then you're going to have essentially an update to your plan document that might be done in the manner of what's called a summary material modification. Again, that's provided by a TPA or in a bundled arrangement, the plan record keeper and administrator. That has to be provided within 210 days, close of a plan year. The last one that I think is often, you know, forgotten too, is what's called the SAR or summary annual report. What that does is it takes the whole, what I call the plan tax filing, which is the 5500 that you're required each year to essentially complete. Depending upon the size of your plan, it might be a much longer form 5500. You might have to go through an actual audit. That is then essentially filed with the Department of Labor. It's then all that data is then ended up taken and put into a very easy to read format, a 1 to 2 page format that has to be provided to plan participants, letting them know essentially what's the health of the plan, the assets, different things like that. So the moral of the story is know your plan providers, work with the people who are supporting you. In many cases, hopefully that's an advisor and somebody that has expertise in this area, and know who provides certain documents and whether they will provide them on your behalf or whether it's your responsibility.
It's a long list for sure. And yeah, it's really, really important that it's, you know, that it gets done correctly. And then, you know, in addition to all of this, which thanks for the long laundry list of some of these things to be able to kind of go through, you know, is document, just like you always talk about every good financial advisor in regards to retirement plan service. You know, just reminds everyone that as long as you're documenting all of this in your process and you're showing that, yes, I did get out the auto enrollment QDIA notice 30 days prior, I did get out the safe harbor notices, to, you know, and when those were sent out, and then there's proof, you're putting that in your vault, you're getting organized and you're making sure that it's done, you're buttoned up. That's pretty darn good, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think you bring up a very good point with a vault. We utilize a vault for all of our plans. Anytime, you know, we've been going through and completing the rest of our plan reviews from 2019, and there are some investment recommendations we're making to many of our plans at this time under our 321 arrangement we talked about last time. Check out the podcast. Ultimately, when we have those different documents signed off or disclosures that are provided and updated from the record keeper, we're going in and vaulting those for our clients. Anytime we go through a meeting where decisions are made, where we talk about the plan, I bring an agenda to our meetings and update it with notes, send those notes back out to the client after the meeting. One thing I've done this year is really do kind of a QDIA or target date analysis with some tools we utilize, and we've vaulted those as well as any presentation materials. I can't stress how important it is to keep good records of decisions that are made on the plans. You can go out there and look. I see daily updates. Some very big names of retirement plans that are on a daily basis being sued in court for the different decisions and not showing prudency or care for the plan and how they came to certain decisions. And having a good process and somebody that can support by vaulting some of these documents for you is paramount, in my opinion. And I think it provides a lot of extra value to plan sponsors.
Well, and one of the things I just want to mention too, like, so we had a Department of Labor audit on one of our plans. And, you know, it's interesting, Lauren, you know, you're in Wisconsin, we're in Indiana, just south of, you know, Chicago, you're north of Chicago. We had a Department of Labor agent actually move out of Chicago into northwestern Indiana, right by us. And suddenly audits on plans in Indiana, you know, they don't travel very far because they don't have a big budget. So, you know, at one time, you know, audits went up in this area by like over 30%. And, you know, it was just interesting how it went. And it went well. You know, we gave them the keys to the audit, to the file, to the fiduciary audit file that's virtual. And basically, you know, they were able to go in, they were able to see the process. It went well. It was good. They actually referred another, like, potential client for us and told them about the vault that we had, which you have access to. And it just amazing to me, like, you know, that was just so great. It was like, you know what, it's such a cool thing to be able to have. I highly recommend anybody that doesn't have it, you know, get one just because they have that organization together and it's not sitting in a file cabinet that might be, you know, I mean, who knows? A tornado might come through your town, fire, you know, storms, you never know. It might all go away and then you don't have that digital, you know, process documented.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I personally, again, have not gone through an audit here in my experience, but you know, I've sat through many different presentations given by different Department of Labor figureheads, previous people, employees of the Department of Labor who've talked about plan audits and kind of what their initiatives are each year. And they've all made it very, very clear that their job is not to try and go and be a headache for plan sponsors or plans. Their job is not that they really don't want to go and assess fines and penalties. Their job really is to make sure that you're just doing what you need to do, which is making sure the plan participants and beneficiaries are taken care of in a prudent manner. And, you know, I think providing those different vault processes are fantastic. And I think the icing on the cake is you actually got a referral from a Department of Labor. I think that's you know, kind of one of those stories that you don't hear very regularly. And it really kind of gives you a nice pat on the back to know that you're looking out for your clients in the manner that, you know, we hold ourselves to. I mean, as you said, you know, we're geeking out on some of this stuff. This stuff, quite bluntly, is very dry. It's very difficult for many people to understand. I do a lot of plan reviews each year. And, you know, I find each year that I have to be careful how in-depth I go, because it's kind of, you know, you start seeing that glazed look of, okay, you know, let's talk about just what's important and what I need to know. And, well, you know, it's...
And sorry to interrupt, but I think that's really, really important. I hope we're adding value here, you know, with Lauren Brandrup as Director of Group Benefits on, you know, the show Money Matters with Greg. You can find it on Spotify. You can find us on iTunes as well, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. And I hope we're adding some sort of value here. I think we certainly are for those plan sponsors trying to, you know, figure it all out there. And if you are trying to learn more as a plan sponsor, it's about for your protection, stuff like that. You know, I certainly know we're adding some value. For that reason, Lauren, if it's okay, I'd love to be able to have you back and we do maybe a part three, you know, of this sort of thing, if that's okay.
Absolutely. I'm a benefits geek. I love this stuff. I love to educate. I love to motivate. You know, and I love to add value to our clients. I work tirelessly to do that, you know, behind the scenes regularly, that many don't even know the amount of hours I work on their plans per year. And I really have tried documenting that now going forward, so I can really show, you know, if there's ever a question, here's everything I've done behind the scenes. And I'd love to be on the show again. I appreciate you allowing me to talk through some of these things and providing an opportunity to educate business owners on, you know, ways to make sure that they're taking care of themselves and their plan participants and beneficiaries. So I appreciate you having me on, and yeah, look forward to doing this again.
Perfect. Well, we'll definitely have a part three. So there it is. If you've made it this far in the podcast and you made it this far during the video and you haven't fast forwarded all the way to the end or clicked pause or stop, we thank you. And hopefully we've been in some sort of added some value to you and your company and your overall 401k and retirement plan, and hopefully some sort of help. So stay tuned. There'll be more. Lauren's going to be back on. And thanks again, Lauren, for being on the show's Money Matters with Greg. By the way, just for compliance reasons, Next Level Planning Wealth Management in Brookfield, Wisconsin is not affiliated with Farrell Wealth in Valparaiso, Indiana. However, we're both affiliated with LPL Financial, which is a registered investment advisor. So there are lots of disclaimers there in regards to that. But Lauren is with LPL as well, so is Greg Farrell. So just wanted to be able to mention that as well. But Lauren, we can find you on LinkedIn. We can find you on your website in lpwm.com. Just want to say thanks to Lauren.
Thank you very much. I hope you learned something today, and I look forward to doing it again. Thanks so much, Greg.
Awesome. Hey, everybody out there, we want to make sure that you're staying healthy and hopefully profitable, and hopefully you have a healthy and profitable week this week. We look forward to doing many more of these on Money Matters with Greg here as far as the podcast, and then also on YouTube. You can find us on the Farrell Wealth YouTube channel. Jump on there, try to figure out. There's lots of other things on there too. And then you can always find us at farrellwealth.com. Hopefully everybody has a healthy and profitable week. Thanks again, Lauren, for being on. And we'll catch you later. See ya.
Thank you very much.
Greg Farrell is the president and CEO of Farrell Wealth and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Lauren Brandrup from Next Level Planning Wealth Management is not affiliated with or endorsed by LPL Financial or Farrell Wealth.